The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, along with his muffins, his lime spindrift. Chris is old, he's injured, and he works with children. Chris Novembrino. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Jeff. Yes, every day we get closer and closer to that CM Punk promo of only a year ago being resonant and salient.
Oh,
I feel it.
Oh, you have no idea, because you have not been following the drama on social media. We'll be getting to that in a moment. But first, attention must be paid. Rest in peace, superstar Billy Graham passing away on Wednesday. It was announced a little bit awkwardly on AEW Dynamite as well, but at the age of 79. I'm going to be honest. Billy Graham's heyday in the 70s, way before my time. But his legacy is all over 1980s wrestling. If you liked Hulk Hogan, if you liked Jesse Ventura, heck, if you liked Paul Ellering in Mid-South, if you liked Austin Idol in any ways, you liked superstar Billy Graham. Graham taking on the name Billy Graham after the famous televangelist. He was hired to work in California after being a bodybuilder and became part of the Graham family kayfabe there, and chose the name Billy Graham. And also, this is something I did not know. It's on the internet, so it must be true, that part of the reason he was one of the first people to use the term brother in promos, because that's how they spoke at revivals. So all the things I love about bad 80s promos, the daddies from the 70s and the brothers from the 70s as well now, attribute to Billy Graham a little bit. Dusty Rhodes took a lot from him. Ric Flair took a lot from him. Triple H said he was one of the reasons he got into professional wrestling. Of course, Triple H also a bodybuilder turned wrestler. I saw him on the decline when I was first starting my wrestling journey. He was in Crockett as part of Paul Jones' army, and he had already gone through kind of the karate thing that everybody watched before. And, you know, and then eventually he turned, and he had a terrible match at Star. He had a match at Starrcade 83 against Wahoo that didn't last very long, and then in 84 he had a, you know, his patented arm wrestling match against the Barbarian, and then a very terrible wrestling match against the Barbarian. I've made fun of this on the show before, but it felt like he was dying for 30 years. And that's just due to all the steroid use and everything, but also just the pleas for, hey, I need a new kidney. I need this. But I will not do him justice, but he is definitely a legacy wrestler that you should seek out a little bit. Peacock has a best of on there right now that I think I'm going to watch over the weekend. I don't think Dave Meltzer is going to have time for this week's Observer, but if he does, it'll be great. But next week's Observer, the obituary, Dave obviously loved Billy Graham and got into wrestling, I think, partially due to Billy Graham. There are three guys that Dave Meltzer loved: Billy Graham, Nick Bockwinkel, and Bruno. And he obviously took it hard if you listen to today's Wrestling Observer Radio. But I'll send to you, Chris. Do you have any memories of Billy Graham? Chris?
Jeff, sorry, you broke up there a little bit there. But do I have any memories of Billy Graham?
Yes.
Yes. That's what I thought. I just wasn't sure if you were done asking the question. So, you know, I didn't watch a ton of Billy Graham matches growing up or anything like that. He was way before my time. But I was thinking about Billy Graham, and actually while you were doing an homage to him, I decided to Google it. And because it occurred to me that there's this character from the game Punch-Out and Super Punch-Out.
Sandman.
Macho Man.
Oh, Super Macho Man, my fault.
Yeah.
I always get those two mixed up.
Yeah, Super Macho Man's basically kind of modeled after Billy Graham. I mean, yeah, the names are, you know, kind of like, you know, mishmash of like Macho Man, Randy Savage, and other things. But like the look of Super Macho Man's basically straight out of Billy Graham. He is the like archetypal 80s power guy heel sort of character. And as you said, yes, like Hogan took a lot of cues off of Billy Graham.
The 24-inch pythons directly from superstar Billy Graham.
But Graham's matches, if memory serves, were never really anything to write home about.
No. But as a presence and as a... See, I'm always interested as to whether or not Billy Graham took a lot from Muhammad Ali or Muhammad Ali took a lot from Billy Graham. And after listening to Dave today, I'm still not quite sure, but I think they probably judiciously shared with one another. But really, one of the first to do those types of promos was Billy Graham. And I think that's his enduring legacy, in addition to the look, was his, to quote Dusty Rhodes, his rap daddy. You know, he'd come out, you know, I'm the tower of power, too sweet to be sour. The biggest arms that do the most harms, all the rhymes from the 70s and whatnot. But yeah, he was around when I first started watching wrestling in Crockett, and they went back to WWF to try and wrestle, and his hip just wouldn't go for him. And he was managing Morocco for a while, which is an interesting combination when you think about it, especially given that both really got on the juice hard at one time. But, you know, as a personality, definitely one that was liberally stolen from as the years went on. As a wrestler, you know, if I told you to go back and watch his matches, I think in a modern...
Like, what would be the match to watch?
There were some Madison Square Garden matches. I think probably one against Bruno. I couldn't tell you his catalog right off the hand. I just know I've
Right. I've seen footage of him and I've been like, I've seen enough of Billy Graham to never be intrigued in seeing more Billy Graham matches. And I've seen a lot of his promos. He's definitely a presence on the microphone.
Yes. Said,
yeah. His matches were really just there.
Right. In other news, upfront this week for Warner Brothers Discovery, where it was announced officially that on Saturday night, starting on, it's June 17th, 2 hours live on Saturday, AEW Collision. Included on this roster, Thunder Rosa, Andrade El Idolo, Miro, FTR in the promotional materials, Hobbs in the promotional materials, missing one CM Punk, who was apparently the night before taken out of all promotional materials, although one accidentally leaked out there. Reported by Fightful on Wednesday that there had been an issue, and it possibly revolved around Ace Steel. Chris Jericho suggesting that possibly Ace Steel be brought back on. Now it gets more interesting. Apparently, Brian Alvarez then tweets, yes, there's something definitely to this Punk stuff. Punk starts tweeting out, Instagramming stories with Dr. Manhattan sitting on Mars saying how sick he is of all this, and then starts going in on Brian Alvarez over a beef from 2006 about him dating Maria Kanellis. It gets better. Today, Fightful Select reporting Ace Steel has actually been employed by AEW for a few months now, quote unquote, as part of the creative team, but is not on the road so as not to upset anybody in the locker room. But he does, he is contributing to the creative team. Chris, this whole thing's a mess and just so much drama. Now nobody really knows what his status is. Is he pulling a Dax here and everybody's trying to work a little so that when he shows up, oh my God, it's a surprise. Look at that. I'm going to quote my improv partner and friend Brian O'Connell, former guest of the show. I want to get his wording exactly correct. I saw earlier, and Jeff, I am so tired of a man who refuses to be happy with money, fame, a great wife, and an awesome dog. So very tired. And I can't say I disagree with him. Chris, your thoughts?
I am baffled how Ace Steel is still employed by the company in the wake of all the reporting around what happened in the locker room. It seems impossible to keep him under employ.
I agree. I am shocked here at reporting from, I know Sean Ross Sapp has sources and I know he talks to a lot of people. But on Wednesday, the locker room is all abuzz about it, and the possibility that that the sticking point here is Ace Steel and Chris Jericho, was supposedly saying, hey, you know what, we should bring him on as solidarity, and he can be over there working with Punk, and we'll be over here, working on Dynamite, and we'll all be happy campers. And then the next day, it comes out, oh, by the way, he's already been employed for the past few months. That just blows my damn mind. It blows my mind mostly.
It makes
because,
you wonder how much of that was news to people working inside the company.
Yes, it is. Tony must run a tight ship when it comes to Tony. That's what I'm thinking. I hope he's not working the boys. I really hope he's not. I tend to think Collision needs CM Punk. Look, this show on Saturday is going to get hammered. I don't understand why they need it to be live, but I get it because everybody goes, oh, live contact, that's it. But they're going to be going up against college football. They're going to be going up against the UFC almost every week. And this isn't the 1980s where there was absolutely nothing going on in the corridor between DC and Atlanta on Saturday afternoons around 5 or 6 o'clock p.m.
Oh, it's just a different
cable is
consumer market, right?
Yes.
I was looking at ratings actually for the major news networks this week, and they're down across the board. And that's just part of like a really long, long 5-year arcing trend of just less viewership of television. It's really, really, really hard to make something that breaks through. But
you know what does? College football.
Well, yeah, but like college football's college football. You know, like the you know, football's football. Football always does good ratings.
Yeah, but I mean, in our day and even like the last 20 years or so, it's really been because you can find a good college game at any time of day across a bevy of networks. And it didn't used to be like that. Like, I really didn't get into college football until I got into college, to be honest, because I mean, it was on, but it was always like, you know, you'd have it on TBS and I didn't have a real rooting interest. And, you know, you'd find it occasionally on CBS and NBC where I lived, but I also didn't have cable. But now with everybody has ESPN now, and ESPN has three channels running, four if you include like the ones just for the league, because the leagues now have their own, or the conferences now have their own channels where they show football games, and they have games all day and through most of the night. And heck, you can turn on at 8 p.m. Pacific and go watch Hawaii up until midnight if you want. I mean, it is on all day. I'm fascinated by this. Also, no numbers announced for any kind of new TV deal, so the rumors remain just that, the rumors. Anything else on this?
I don't think so.
Okay. Brian Danielson also, according to Fightful Select, will be part of the creative team for Collision. Good pickup, you think?
Interesting. I don't know that we've ever really gotten much of a flavor of what Danielson's sense of storytelling is.
I kind of agree. And it's kind of weird. Because he's probably had the opportunity to take more control of his storylines in like WWE, and it just like, I just kind of want to have fun, you know, I just kind of want to do my time, have a kind of a sheepish grin. We've never heard of him as being necessarily a political animal, so to speak. And being, you know, creative,
he's just not a big, he's like stories in the match, but he's just not a big like stories guy.
Like if like you that. Watch, I have a documentary called Wrestling Road Diaries that Colt Cabana did with him and Brian Danielson right as he got signed by WWE. And you don't really, I mean, you get the sense that Danielson loves wrestling and he loves teaching. But the creativity part and the, and you know, story building and things like that, that just, I'll be interested. Let's put it that way. It just doesn't seem like it would necessarily be a strong suit where he's a big ideas guy, but you never know. You put guys in those roles and sometimes they just blossom. You know, you get a guy in a room with four or five other people and you're throwing around ideas and you get comfortable finally being able to throw out junk. It's like being in a writer's room almost, you know. Once you're comfortable with the fact that you may give a spectacularly stupid pitch and you get more comfortable, you can become a genius in that room, you know, by either helping somebody else's ideas or throwing out ideas for your own. So I'll be interested in that. It's going to do it for our news section. Now, the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever comes to mind, classic, new, what have you. I have watched a bevy of classic content, so I'll probably throw a little bit of that in mind. But Chris, I'm going to give you first dibs on the Lazy River this week.
Oh boy, it was quite the week, of wrestling, especially on the WWE side. So where to begin? The only good thing on NXT was the Creeds versus the Dyad.
I would agree.
That was about it. Like
the Dyad's killing themselves, even though they don't want to be at that company anymore.
I know. And I'm glad they do for the Creeds, because like it gives us a good match. Nathan Frazier, Dragon Lee, and Noam Dar was cringe-inducing. It was absolutely atrocious.
Supernova sessions, all of it. Yeah. I understand the trolling nature of the show. It was never my thing on NXT UK. I think you liked it more than
I thought it was much better on NXT UK, but like that's also because Dar like
Shaw Samuel too.
Yeah, he had Shaw Samuel and a lot more creativity like with what the segments are. And you still have Nathan Frazier doing the John Oliver character.
Yeah.
Or whatever, like whatever it is that that's supposed to be.
I'll give Noam Dar one thing. I absolutely howled at the backstage segment with Lash Legend. And I don't know the first name she's using, but she goes by Miss Jackson. He very smoothly pulls out the Outcast. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. I know you're for real.
The interaction with him and Lash was great. The reference to Alicia Fox, and also like maybe the subtle implication that Dar has a type, and that Lash might be his type. I don't know. Like I that at least cracks me up a little bit. But outside of that, man, like what's to say about this? Like Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, Melo. They're not doing a good job presenting Melo as a champion, and they never do a good job with babyface champions. And they had that issue with Breaker. Like he's infinitely more interesting as a heel. Melo is infinitely more interesting as a heel. And
he's an underdog who gets beat up every week.
Right. And like, he gets beat up every week. And like Trick is like his buddy. Who's like supposed to be as heavy, but he's not even that useful.
Right.
Like, there was a really good opportunity to sideline Trick for several weeks in the build to this, you know, when you had Breaker have the feud with Melo, or in the build to Breaker's match with Melo, where you have Breaker, you know, hospitalized Trick or whatever after the match, but they didn't even go that far. And Trick's not helping Melo. He doesn't help Melo in build sympathy in any way. It's like not even like they're not even like the New Age Outlaws or something like that. Where like, you know, if you beat up Billy or if you beat up Road Dogg, then Billy Gunn would really have to fight on behalf of Road Dogg or something like that.
He's
like
a cocky smack talking babyface who gets his ass beat. Who's gonna get behind that?
Like, and at the end of the day, Trick Williams' name is Trick. Like, there's just limits to how much of a baby face this guy can be.
What are you saying? Cheap Trick weren't baby faces? Come on.
I mean, Cheap Trick Williams.
I only have two bad quick notes on NXT. I remain fascinated by Thea Hale. Thespian, after she lost that match, just the disappointed look on her face with Professor Duke Hudson, and then of course JC Jane licking Roxanne Perez's head mid match. I'm just like, I like her. I hate this story with Gigi. No offense to Gigi, but it's just, yeah. I mean, everything on here seems. And there was one match, I forgot what it was, but it was like almost like midway through the match, it felt like they just started going in slow motion so that they could get all the moves correct. And you're like almost watching a training film of wrestling.
Was that Stratton and Dolan?
It might have been Stratton and Dolan, yeah.
Yeah, like, because I don't remember that one being very strong.
I thought it was a men's match, and I can't remember what it was. It might have actually been the Dyad match for a very short time. Where it's like, okay, we have to slow this down because the Creeds aren't quite up to it yet, kind of a thing. But no, I mean, I enjoyed that match. I mean, the Creeds are always enjoyable. So, but the angle building on here, especially your boy Von Wagner.
Every week he just gets better and better. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, okay. he stood up for Mr. Stone this week. Characterization.
I'll put over one good thing I really liked in WWE this week, and that was the announcement of Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa going after the tag titles. I thought that was really, really well done, especially the end where they dedicated to the greatest team in WWE history, Afa and Sika. Look, I agree with most people that the Bloodline story is a little bit played, and I don't think it's as interesting once you get into the internal struggles between the four Samoans in there. But Roman killed it on that promo. Absolutely killed it on that promo and makes this material rise above what it really is, in my opinion. And also Paul Heyman going around cutting deals with Imperium and with the Judgment Day and just being sneaky and conniving. I really like that too. But, you know, I understand people's criticism, but I really liked the work that they did with the Bloodline this week.
I actually generally agree with you on the SmackDown promo. This act is long in the tooth. I will also agree with you on the Paul Heyman going and connecting other heel factions potentially to Roman and Solo so that at some point the Usos can be turned on, and they'll be turned on by like one of these heel factions who will be the new people aligned with Roman. It is certainly a way of getting the Usos out of this storyline and at least doing something different with them. But I still think that some of the fundamental problems of the storyline remain.
Yeah.
Despite them all, but like it, as you said, like Roman rises above weak material here, which, you know, is impressive. And certainly, as you know, when you kind of sum up his career, he does that routinely throughout this storyline. He's doing it again this year here, but I can applaud some of these moves, but still not be interested in the slightest in this storyline. And that's where I'm at.
Understood. Your turn, sir.
Let's continue, I guess, on Raw. Man, I'm trying to see like what is worth talking about on Raw.
Not much.
No, I am just going like match by match and scanning through here, and I'm like, jeez, Louise.
I'll throw out something and I'll ask you.
Was there something on Raw you liked? Let me ask you that.
There's stuff I found interesting. I find it interesting that both Sammy and Kevin are going to Saudi Arabia in addition to Ali, and that Ali is going to be sacrificed to Gunther in Saudi Arabia.
No, I thought that was an interesting move.
That is such a... Although that just reeks of, where's Ali from? Screw it. We'll have him job in the Middle East.
Didn't they let him win in Chicago? So maybe they've got his hometown confused.
Yes, they did.
So, I mean, dude, like, I guess the Seth Rollins... I can't even say the Seth Rollins promo was good. Like, I'm like looking at, like, I'm like just rereading everything that was on this card. I'm like, the Seth Rollins promo, he's still so hammy. I don't get the point of this ostentatious character. And that sounds like a weird thing to say in the world of professional wrestling, but Seth Rollins manages to get me to do it.
No, I, you know, if this was, see, between both him and Becky, it's like, I can't stand this man character, as I've said, because not because I don't like Becky being a badass. It's because I hate her promo style when she's the man, where she's really trying to, for lack of a better term, Conor McGregor it up, and she starts talking faster and faster and faster. And let me tell you something, you know, that kind of thing where it's almost fake anger. But Seth Rollins is almost going out there and doing an instructional manual for all other WWE employees on how to survive in Vince McMahon's WWE. There's no rhyme or reason to him being hammy. He just wants to be eccentric and be a bad sketch comedian and dress in whatever clothes he finds at a thrift store in whatever town.
He has a signature laugh, as all great characters do.
Yes, the Snidely Whiplash evil mustache twirling laugh from the baby face. He wants to be the Joker, I think. I honestly think this is
more the Penguin.
Well, yes, the Burgess Meredith. but no, I mean, I think he wants to be the I can't remember the actor's name for some reason. I'm blanked.
Heath Ledger.
No. The Joker, Leto? The film, the adult version.
Jared Leto.
No.
It wasn't Jared Leto.
The Jared Leto.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Thank you. The Jared Leto version is one that we should forget and never talk of it ever again. Single worst characterizations ever. Just a guy who, and a guy actor who just did not get the character at all, given his instincts. But he used to like send like pig's heads to cast members as a joke, because, oh, I'm getting in character, look at me. And you're just like, dude, just act, you fool. I'm gonna turn it over to AEW, and it's something I'm still questioning even after doing a podcast on the show last night, and that is, what was the point of this entire Jungle Boy story last night? I thought the story going in to Double or Nothing would be four pillars all built up, all going in on hot win streaks, and any one of them could take the title from them. But it looks like they've kind of did a double turn last night, with Sammy being a babyface in Austin and Jungle Boy. Well, I'll get to this and get to my logic in a moment, but Jungle Boy gets beat down by Rush for 98% of this match, grabs the tights for a win.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
How sympathetic are we making this Jungle Boy going in where he should be a babyface? It's obvious to me that they're going to turn him in the match, or at least they're trying to make that obvious. And they're now going to do a swerve where he doesn't turn and Sammy just reverts back to being a jerk. That's going to suck. But if you're going to turn Jungle Boy, you don't want to tip your hand. And to me, you kind of have to go against the grain of the story here. And if that was going to happen, you tell the story then that Darby had a relatively easy match in the tag match against the former Firm. I forget the other Big Bill and Lee Moriarty. And Big, yes, Bill's great. Big Bill should be the giant they push, not Wardlow or Hobbs. No offense to either of them. Those two should be a tag team with a guy who can talk and just kill the tag team division. But Big Bill has personality, and Big Bill is pretty damn good as a giant, I think. But nevertheless, so they have an easy night. Sammy goes in there against Exodus Prime.
He also has an easy night.
30 seconds, yes. And then Jungle Boy has to go in against a former ROH champion, gets the brakes beaten off of him. And if he's going to turn heel, I think he should have lost here.
Oh, I'll go another way. I think he should have, if he's going to turn heel, I think he should have cheated really early in the match and gotten a surprise win.
Okay. I can take that too.
Yeah, like 2 minutes into the match, he hits Rouge with a low blow while like Jose the assistant is talking to the ref or something like that, and rolls up Rouge.
Oh, so you'd go even stronger into it. I was trying to make it more of a surprise when he actually turns in the match. because he's so bitter about how this whole thing's like, these guys had it easy all night long, and you put me in there with this guy. And good Lord, that match. Roosh gave him nothing. It was almost not selling for anything Jungle Boy was doing too. I mean, this was the Roosh we were worried about when he got signed. But I just think if you're going to turn him heel, you make it more of a surprise in the course of the match, as opposed to, oh, see, he grabbed the tights and still eked out the win. So he's starting to learn how to cheat. He's starting to learn what Max is telling him, all these other things.
Well, my only thing is, I want them to, if you're going to do it before the match, full commit to it. Don't
make,
do any
make
of this.
Sense.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just full commit to it, because what I'm worried about is what you're talking about, where they will have this moment where, yeah, Jack Perry totally cheated to win here, and we never revisit it.
Yeah. No, but, I'm like, they get cold,
they get cold. Yeah, they get cold feet during the match. Like, oh, let's not turn Jungle Boy.
Yeah, I just it was one of those things where it's like, I think they kind of blew the storytelling, to be honest with you.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think they did a nice job including Christian last week. I think maybe that was actually that was a nice little seed that now we can see into the second week here. Huh. Interesting.
No, my mind hasn't been made up, because, I mean, I went full on. I was kind of mad at this whole thing, because I was just like, well, I thought, you know, Sammy should have been cocky heel this entire time, as opposed to, well, I respect you type of a thing. While Jungle Boy was getting played up as one of two possibilities to win this with Darby. And then Darby started getting hot. They cooled him off. They absolutely, again, not to bring this up again, but, you know, killing Jack Perry with the, you're part of that California clique that got signed because your daddy or whatever. I mean, this match is not hot going in. Let's put it that way.
No, I agree. I mean, in particular, it's not hot going in, because you do not think for a second that any of these three guys is going to win the title off
right.
of MJF.
Exactly.
And absent that, and absent a credible threat to MJF's title reign ending, the only intrigue here would be, will Jungle Boy turn heel? And that, at this point, they've more or less done so much legwork in that direction that if they don't just complete that story, it'll be unsatisfying, but that's not going to be a big surprise either.
Right. Your turn, sir.
Man. We have hit a lot of AEW at this point.
We only hit one thing.
Have we? Oh, I thought we did. No, you talked about Orange Cassidy.
No,
and
I didn't.
I mentioned
the match. Yeah. I didn't talk about it. If you want to talk about it, go ahead.
I mean, I don't need to break down the match at length.
What do you think of this? As he gets beat down last week by Kyle Richards of Aussie Open, and then he just challenges 20 other men to a battle royal.
I mean, I think this is funny. I think he loses the title here.
Do you?
Yes.
I think that's the way to take it off of him, but I don't think he loses it.
Oh, you think he wins this? As like the feel good moment.
Yeah.
But like, see, like, they're going to need a title change, and he also makes sense as a title challenger for MJF going forward here too.
True.
So I think this is the time to get the belt off of him. Now that you finish with the four pillars, you need new challengers for MJF.
True.
I liked the Jarrett, Dutt, Lethal, and, you know, Harwood and Cash Wheeler thing for what it was.
I adored this.
Yeah,
this is just cheap Memphis build right here. And look, I don't even mind Karen Jarrett, although it has me now thinking, who do they bring in on the other side to neutralize Karen Jarrett? Maybe Mama Briscoe, I don't know.
I know, like, what's the polar opposite of Karen Jarrett?
Who's available? And I can't think of anybody right offhand, but no,
maybe Alundra Blaze?
I thought about that. That was actually the one that I was suggesting. If she's not under contract, if her Legends contract, it won't interfere with it. I don't know how that goes, but yeah, no, that one I can see. But yeah, no, this is just simple storytelling. Got a beat down. Sotnam took a bump, which is kind of awesome, and then he gets mad and he rips his jacket and double choke slam Sotnam. I want to see more of Sotnam eventually, but yeah, and I liked also the subtlety of it looked like Jay Lethal wasn't completely in on whatever was about to go down right before it went down, because I think he's still very worried about Mark Briscoe. So I like that too. Yeah, everything about this worked for me.
I agree. No, I like this. Ruby Soho and Toni Storm versus Britt Baker and Hikaru Shida. Like, I don't have a ton to say about this match. Some nice bumps in the middle. The finish is, I don't know what it is about Ruby Soho, but I've just never really connected with her match style.
Understood. I thought Shida was great in this match.
Yes. Shida was the standout in the match.
Yeah.
She did, what was the spot she did from the top ropes to the outside?
She kind of climbed over in the middle there and did a cross body block.
Yeah, like that's like when I'm like closing my eyes, I can like sort of like revisualize that moment. She was definitely like the standout in this match for me.
No, this Dynamite I thought was really, really good. The other thing that I thought was really, really
well,
strong,
the main event was I thought well done.
Yes.
I liked, yeah, the finish to the main event was really a really good television finish.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I think my one kind of weakish spot was Ricky Starks.
Oh God! Whoa. What more can we say about Jay White and Ricky Starks? These two guys, I'm like the sum is less than the parts by like an order of magnitude. It feels like,
you know, the crowd was hot and the crowd wanted Ricky Starks to win that match because hometown guy, you know, hometown babyface type thing. But I, let's see, like you and Ruby, Ricky Starks and I don't connect. At all, as a babyface, I love Ricky Starks as a heel. I think he's a phenomenal heel. And as a babyface, he's very, and this is gonna come off as an insult, but I don't mean it as such. He's very NXT-ish as a babyface to me, because it doesn't move, poses, doesn't move, poses, poses, doesn't move. You know, that kind of thing. He always knows where the hard cam is, because he's always looking into it and smiling in some way. And I didn't like the ending of that match. I just thought it was dumb. I understand they're trying to protect Jay White.
Why, though? Like, then why are these guys having a feud?
Yes.
This is supposed to be Stark's rehab feud.
Yes.
Unless
but they're going
to
beat him.
Yeah,
they're going to beat him.
Oh, I know. They're going to, even though they need strong baby faces right now. I mean, Jay White's, what is Jay White's ceiling is an interesting question as well.
A lot of people think he's a world champion material. I'm not there yet. I understand he's wrestler.
I don't see what the pathway is to there with MJF at the top of the company.
Roddy Strong and Chris Jericho was awesome too.
I liked that match.
That was fun. I mean, I was
not expecting to get into that match. I got into that match.
I got a little frightened for Chris Jericho in that stairwell, but then I saw the ledge. I was like, oh, okay, there's a ledge there. Yeah, and they were smacking the crap out of each other, and that was some. And even the Jay White Ricky Starks match, they started just laying in those chops. I mean, it was a hard hitting night of AEW wrestling. It was a lot of fun, I thought. I'm gonna be interested to see they do this.
You know what I want to say? The usage of the Hangman like re-debut with the Elite, that was a really good timing of that. I thought that they waited for that, they kept their powder dry on that. They finally did it. It was good. It kind of questionable in terms of building to a match that's in like what, like 2 weeks or something like that.
Well, they announced the Anarchy in the Arena match, and I thought that was a nice way to do that. But next week needs to be all hard sell, hard sell, hard sell.
Right.
And The only match I know that's announced for next week is for some reason they're doing the Lucha Brothers versus Blackpool Combat Club for the Ring of Honor Tag Championships. When it's like, why are we? No, you can defend the Ring of Honor Tag Championships anytime you like, but the hard sell on the go home show needs to be hard selling on the go home show for the pay per view. It baffles me sometimes, Chris, the logic.
I would fake out book that and just be like, oh, it was supposed to be that. And then you have, like, I don't know, the Elite come out and basically.
Yes, that's what's going to happen, I think. I think you're exactly right on that.
Yeah, so.
I want to take an opportunity and mention some historical stuff that I was watching this week. I had never seen Jim Cornette's debut in Memphis. And it's funny because he debuts at a time where both Jimmy Hart and James J. Dillon are managers in Memphis. And he's been an in-ring photographer the whole time. And he comes in and he's doing, you know, he is being genuine here and he's playing it straight with Lance Russell. And Jerry Lawler comes out and humiliates him. And it's an awesome villain origin story, because then the next week, Cornette comes out and he goes, I'm very upset with what Jerry Lawler did to me, and I've marked him off my list of people I want to manage. And he's watching it's funny because when he debuts, he's watching a Bobby Eaton match of all things. And of course later, but the next week he comes out, he wants to sign Bill Dundee, and Bill Dundee goes, oh, I was your second choice. And then Dundee and Lawler both proceed to humiliate him again. I'm just like, this is such a great origin story for a heel. And something else I did not know, the first person that Jim Cornette ever announced as managing was Sherry Martel. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting combo right there. Because this was when Sherry, of course, was still a full-time wrestler. But awesome to see. And I also rewatched, just for giggles, that Battle Royal from Slamboree 98. Where it's 25 years to the day today that Dean Malenko dressed up as Cyclope, get the word right there, Hawkins, to then fight Jericho at the end.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And dude, when Jericho was making fun of the death of Malenko's father, the fire that Malenko has in his offense there. If he had had that every time, I mean, he could have been a killer babyface so often, but he was always playing the cool, calm, collective one. And this crowd, this is still when WCW crowds were still able to pop for cruiserweights and stuff. This crowd went nuts for it. It was such a great moment. I remember it, but you know, with so much current content, you rarely go back and watch a lot of old stuff unless you're me. You're tired of NXT, but man, that was such a just watching him fire up like a baby and fire up the crowd. I just go, God, Dean Malenko, so awesome in that program. Your turn, sir.
Man,
if you have anything,
I'm trying to see if I've got anything else here. I don't know.
Stunning audio. Okay, well, let's just cut it off then.
Yeah, let's cut it off.
All right, you follow me at Crap Game 13. You follow Chris on that's on Twitter. You can follow Chris on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. It's called The Dynamite Show. Myself and Paul Ace Fontaine thoroughly deconstruct the night's Dynamite. We go on the air about 15 minutes afterwards, or at least we record, and then it releases in about an hour after Dynamite is over with. You can find that once again at patreon.com/fightgamemedia. Chris has other interests as well. He'd like to plug them now.
Oh yeah, so I'll be doing a Jimi Hendrix summer camp this summer on June 17th. It'll be on that Friday, every Friday starting on June 17th. So like June 17th, and then 7 days after that, and then 7 days after that, and 7 days after that. If you're interested in attending, hit me up on the Instagram at Dr_Nove. And I also teach guitar lessons. If you're interested in guitar lessons this summer, hit me up. We can get you set up with some guitar lessons.
See you next week, kids.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.